From the Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you are exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. Welcome. Speaking of welcome, Karen, welcome back.
Thank you. Had the band concert last week, and I just have to say, speaking of music, that starting music, I feel like it should have been a silent movie. I should have been tied to the railroad tracks, and Rick, you should have been standing above me twirling your mustache in like a black top hat and monocle.
Oh, I would totally grow my mustache out for something like that, too. Like, yes, come train, come take her away. The show will all be mine.
Oh, so good show tonight. We are going to be, oh, you know what, Cheryl, I didn't ask you how to pronounce Frank's last name.
Why not?
Because I forgot. How do you pronounce Frank's last name?
Well, I'm going to go with Santariga.
Okay, so we're going to be talking to Frank Santariga, and he's a UFO researcher, and he is the author of Paranormal Family and Friends. He sent me the book. I just got it this week. I started reading it. Unfortunately, I did not finish, but I hear Rick did better with it than I did. Right, Rick?
Yeah, I got my homework in a little bit better. I mean, it's a really good read. You know, he goes into a lot of, you know, of course, with his family and friends, how they, all of their paranormal experiences over the years, everything from ghosts to monsters to UFOs. And from what I gather, that there is a lot of psychic ability that's in his family. So it'll be nice to talk to him. Also, too, he is, in fact, he is a parapsychologist.
Love those.
I know, and everybody knows how much I love parapsychologists.
I love parapsychologists. Oh, I find totally. Them awesome. So I'm excited to talk to him. That's going to be a lot of fun. So, hey, we're starting a new thing with the magazine next week. Next month, right, Cheryl?
You are right.
And Cheryl
next month,
has
January.
Asked me to, yes, Cheryl has asked me to make a top 10 list every issue. And so I thought, just to get us in the spirit of this new feature that I'm going to be writing, I have created a top 10 list for tonight's show.
Awesome.
I know. Are you ready? It is the top 10 stupid things that I am afraid of.
Okay.
Number 10, ghosts messing with me when I sleep. I'm not afraid of ghosts, but I am terrified of them. Like, if I don't like to be messed with when I sleep. And if I sleep in a haunted hotel room, I don't want them to wake me up.
So that whole scene from Ghostbusters where the chick ghost is like floating over Ray Stantz and reaches down and starts to molest him in his sleep. You wouldn't like something like that, huh?
No, I haven't seen it, but no, I don't like ghosts messing with me when I sleep. I do not like being startled awake. So one night, as a matter of fact, I fell asleep and something woke me up and I was laying on my back. And I woke up and there was this hand hanging over my face and I totally freaked out. And you know what it was? It was my hand. My elbow was propped up next to me, and my hand was hanging over my face. True story.
See, that's awesome. I think it's so hilarious when, like, people scare themselves. That's why when you're watching, like, a lot of the television shows, I'm thinking 9 times out of 10, they scare themselves.
Oh, I know. Well, in that case, I scared the poop out of myself because my hand was hanging right over my face. Hilarious. Anyway, okay, so number 9, that creepy religious guy who used to live down the hill. I am scared of him, but thank God he moved away. Number 8, snakes. Number 7, public restrooms. And I hear that there's another member of our show who has a similar fear. You want to out yourself?
Who, me?
I
no.
do.
Oh.
I do. I have that same fear.
Cheryl's afraid of public restrooms too.
Yes,
you guys can't poop in public.
I cannot poop in public. I was trying to be really, really subtle about that, but yes, yeah. I will explode before I will poop in a public restroom.
Karen, don't you know that everybody poops, according to the book anyways?
Everybody poops, but I don't in public restrooms. Okay, number 6, and this is actually not related to public restrooms, but it's going to sound like it. Outhouses. Terrified of outhouses. Mm-hmm. Number 5, dead mice. Not live mice, just dead mice.
Dead mice, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You realize they can't hurt you anymore, right?
I know.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. Number four, bats. Everybody knows that.
I love bats.
I've made no qualms about bats. Terrified of them. Number three, I don't know if you know this one about me or not. Popsicle sticks.
Why are you... Oh, no, hold on a second here. Now, that just sounds like a completely irrational fear. What are you so afraid about with popsicle sticks?
And tongue depressors.
Gotcha.
I can't even talk about it.
Okay.
Moving on. Okay, number two. Now, you think popsicle sticks is weird and irrational? Number two is Weird Al Yankovic. Not kidding.
He's a nerd god. I worship the man.
Afraid of him. Terrified. What? When he was in town, this last summer at the fair performing. When he was in town, I did not leave my house that day in case I accidentally ran into him.
I'm sorry, but it's like I said, the guy's a nerd god. You know,
I had a nightmare
every nerd
about
worships
once.
Him, you know?
Yeah, I had a nightmare once about Weird Al Yankovic and Ruth Buzzy, and they were stalking me and peeking in the windows of my house. And since then, I've been afraid of Weird Al Yankovic and Ruth Buzzy, but nobody, I mean, that's a reference. Most people don't know who she is anymore. People still know who Weird Al is, and I'm afraid of him. You ready
I know who
for
she
number
is.
One?
I
number
know Ruth Buzzy. Sorry, go ahead.
It's a combination of two of my earlier fears. I am afraid of bats in outhouse toilets.
I can see that. Are you
bats
afraid they're going
to
like come
fly
up
out of an outhouse toilet? Not the outhouse itself, the actual toilet hole. I'm pretty sure when I open an outhouse toilet after dark, that a bat is going to fly out of that toilet hole and bite me in the butt.
So it's the giant poop bat of North America that you're afraid of.
I don't know.
I'll have to get Ken Gerhardt on that. I'll have to him later on. Giant. You know anything about this guy?
Hey, you know what? Maybe that could be one of my top 10 things is the top 10 made up, the top 10 cryptids I just made up.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh. So, Cheryl, so what's your number one fear, Rick?
My number one fear?
Yeah.
Okay, my number one fear is I'm not afraid to admit, and I've admitted before, I am terrified of water.
Okay.
I can shower, I can drink it, I can bathe in it, that's not a problem. Swimming pool, I can kind of sort of do it, but I have a little bit of anxiety. But rivers, lakes, oceans, I freeze up in fear. I can't go in because I will drown. Yeah.
Wow. Did you almost drown as a kid?
I'm kind of wondering if maybe I drowned in a former life.
That was going to be my next question. And, of course, we know what Cheryl's number one fear is.
You should know.
Yeah. You know what it is, Rick?
Zombies,
that's right.
You know that can't happen, right, Cheryl?
Did you notice
that's what you say, Rick. That's what you say now.
Mm-hmm. Did you notice that none of my fears were December 1st, 2012?
Yeah.
So Rick wanted to know what happened. He said because on 12/12/12, he was shocked because he thought that psychics were going to like start shooting rainbows out of their butts. Isn't that what you said?
Yeah, and light rays out of their fingertips.
Said I absolutely did those things, so I'm not sure what happened to you.
Maybe I just was asleep that day. I have no idea, and I didn't notice rainbows shooting out of my butt. But yeah, I thought that there was supposed to be something where a person's psychic ability was supposed to be extra specially strong, and there was supposed to be an awakening. But I don't know. I mean, I had an awakening about 5 years ago when I stopped being a really just kind of a douchebag about stuff. So
you did.
Yes.
Wait,
I
you
did,
said you stopped?
You stopped? You mean you were worse?
I was worse, yes. We had this talk
Holy
once
crap,
before, but
I can't even imagine that.
Yes, well, we had this talk once before, and I don't want to offend anybody, especially when it comes to their political ideology, but yes, I used to be I used to be kind of like Rush Limbaugh's adoptive son, so. But that changed.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that would be really interesting. Okay, so it is a quarter past the hour, and I think you know what that means.
Rainbows are going to shoot out of our butts?
Rainbows are going to shoot out of Rick's butt. And while awesome. That happens, we are also going to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to be talking with our guest. So stick around. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. We will be right back.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hi everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
There's something in your mind you cannot hide. You can try everything. You'll be high in the end. But there's something on your cheek. It's flowing like a creek. Are there tears? Or just dying memories? Keep doing what you do. All the stolen thief. Keep seeing what you say, but remember that everywhere. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief, my friend. Maybe you think the people would fall into your traps, but look better around you. There's nothing but your lies. You're lost in your mind without no compass. You can try to pinch yourself and wake up fast. Keep doing what you do. But at any way, you are the stolen thief. Keep seeing what you say. We're beaming blood out everywhere. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief, my friend. Keep
keep doing what you do. But remember that anyway, you are the stolen thief. And keep saying what you say. But remember that anyway, you'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief. You'll be the stolen thief, my friend.
Station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, everybody. We're back to back at Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen and Rick. And joining us tonight is going to be Frank Santariga. Now, Frank Santariga is a parapsychologist as well as a UFO researcher and as well as the author of Paranormal Family and Friends. Frank received his fellowship from the American Parapsychological Research Center. So, you know, he's like the real deal. So, you know, Frank Santariga, welcome to the Underground.
No, thank you very much, Rick. Pleasure to be there.
Excellent. So I did, you know what, I did read, you know, some of your book. You know, like I was telling you before, we have a two-year-old, so life sometimes happens. But you know what I did read, I really liked it. And what I like about it is that you take a lot of your material from what your family has experienced, correct?
Right, yeah, and it seems to be run pretty wild in my family. There's quite a few people that did have experiences. I guess, like in your case, it comes through the family. It started like with my grandmother, aunts, mm-hmm. my aunts, into my mother. You know, it went right through the whole family.
Yeah.
And I believe right now some of my relatives do still have that capability.
Yeah.
So my question about that is because I believe it runs through my family as well. My son has the same types of abilities as I do, although it seems a little stronger because he's had them earlier and more. I believe my grandmother had the abilities, although nobody would admit it. So do you think that it's actually genetic and it runs in families, or do you think it runs in families because in certain families there's more of an openness to that and that everybody has it?
I think you hit it on the head, the last part of it. I think we have more of an openness for it. Now, I know people are going to call me out on the carpet on this, but I believe everyone has this capability. It's mm-hmm. just like any other thing. You've got to learn how to develop it and use it. Like in the case where you have children, well, they're more open, if you think about it. They're more open to everything that's around them. And at that age, at that young age, if they do have that little bit more than we had when we were kids to see the grandparent that passed away or to talk to a relative that had passed away, they have that capability. But again, we have that capability. Some people have it almost like I want to say natural, that it comes to them easy, that they have it. But others can develop it. I mean, if you talk to these mediums and psychics, they'll tell you the same thing. I've sat with quite a few of them, and they told me, you can do it. It's just a matter of you've got to put your consciousness into that stage. You've got to be at that level. But again, I think people have, you know, people are born with it too. You just might not have that capability.
Yeah. So one of the things, and I actually emailed you about this, one of the things that was fascinating is that I've been doing some informal research into migraines and psychic abilities. And you were telling me that your mother had them before.
Before, yes.
And I get them after. Would you share the results of that research? Because I found it really fascinating.
Okay. I'm trying to remember. I think I've done, it was 50 people that I've talked to about it, people who had migraines. And out of the 50, I think there were six men and the rest were women. But the odd thing about it was that it almost split in half. It's almost like half of them had it before and half of them had it later on. There's no definitive say most of people get it when they, before they get the headache, you know, before they get the headache. You can't say that because there was quite a few other people that said they got it after the headache. But in the cases that I've known personally, my mother and my Aunt Adrian, they've got it before. They got the headache before. But my cousin Claudia, she would get it after. And my wife, she would get it after the headache.
Yeah, and I do. The day after, if I do an investigation that's got a lot of activity, the next day, oh my God, I'm down. I'm down for the count.
My wife also. She can't do nothing for the whole damn day. It's really rough. Yeah.
Well, I take a fistful of Tylenol right before I go on investigation because it's like because I know that if there's going to be something there, that I'm going to sense it, and that old third eye is going to open up, and it's going to hurt like hell.
So you get it during?
I get it during. Yep, definitely. And so it's like I said, I take a fistful of Tylenol before I go. I bring Tylenol with in case I need it, and it, you know, it seems to help. It doesn't completely get rid of it because it's more of a psychic thing than it is a physical thing. But it sucks.
Yeah, I can imagine. Especially migraines. I know the way my wife describes them, she sees all these stars and auras and lightning flashes.
Yep.
And I feel bad. I mean, there have been a couple of times where I had to go pick her up at a shopping because she just wound up getting it and she can't do it. She just can't drive when it gets to that type of condition. It's real bad.
Yeah.
But it was almost like I wish I had that email in front of me, but it was almost like an even break, if I can recall right. It was almost like 30 did and 28 didn't, did it after, got it after, that type of thing.
Well, I just thought it was really interesting because I thought I was being so original in looking into this.
Like I said, a while back, my wife always got it, and I noticed that she, afterwards, you know, she would sense, like, sometimes she senses her mother around her, things like that, or her brother. But then, like, a day or two later, she would get a migraine, a real bad migraine. And then I'm trying to put these things together. It says, well, you know what? Maybe it has something to do with that. She is sensitive to those things, though. But, again, my mother would, she would get the migraine first, and then she would have the visions.
So, Frank, let's go back to the beginning with you. I mean, obviously, you didn't become interested in the paranormal because of a television show. I'm going to assume that. I mean,
almost.
Right? No, I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
No, I said almost. There was when I was a kid, growing up, there used to be a show called One Step Beyond.
Oh, my God. I love One Step Beyond.
That used to scare the hell out of me. Let me tell you. I used to go to bed with the covers over my head. But they would have these freaky things that, you know, you got to try to explain what happened. That got my interest up. And then as I got older, I happened to be in Italy visiting my grandfather one time. And I was with a cousin and a bunch of fellas that ride. They belong to like a bicycle club. And they go riding, you know, different places. And we were riding up on one of the mountains, and the lead rider had stopped to wait, of course, to wait for me, because I'm not a rider. So, and he had pointed up in the air and said, hey, look, a flying saucer. He said that in Italian, and I caught a little bit of it because I didn't understand too much.
Right.
And we looked, and we saw this object coming down. It looked to me like, if you will, to hold a dime at an arm's length. It looked to me like a meteor almost, with sparkles coming out of it. And it was coming down, but it was coming down kind of slow. So my first impression was, wow, this is a meteor, and this thing's going to hit the town. I mean, we were up in the mountain. We saw it going heading to the town.
Right.
But within a couple of seconds later, it leveled off, and then it spun around the entire mountain. Now, that mountain has to be at least 6 miles around to get around. Mm-hmm. And as it came around again, it shot up in the air. And, people tell me, well, you saw UFOs. But I don't know. I saw something strange, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if it was a meteor, sure, a meteor is going to keep on a constant trajectory, but to level off and, That tells me that there's something intelligent there guiding it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there had to be. Like I said, I expected that town to just get wiped out. I had visions of reading the paper next day, town wiped out by meteor. But instead, the headlines in the paper was that the whole town had watched this occur. So at least it wasn't just me, you know, visioning, or just a bunch of us guys. It was quite a few people had seen it. So it was that got me going too. You know, I started getting interested in that at that point. And then I got to read more about it. Then I met up with the gentlemen from the association, the Paranormal Association, and mm-hmm. they got me talking into it. And all of a sudden, before you know, I'm looking into these cases and looking for UFOs and looking for ghosts and things like that. It really took me over. I mean, I wish I could have done it full time, but I got to work.
Yeah.
But that was how it got me going.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I, you know, had my first experience when I was 8 years old, and back in like 1982. And I remember going to the library and asking them if they had any books on ghosts. They had three books. One was for kids, and two were by Hans Holzer, and that was it. Now you go into a library, and you have got almost an entire section that is all UFOs, cryptozoology, ghosts. What do you attribute this new fascination to?
Well, two things. First of all, you know, TV. It's all over the TV now. You see all these ghost hunters, all these ghost club hunter clubs, and things of that nature. And second of all, I think people are more attuned to these things. People now are starting to say, "Hey, wait a minute, maybe there is something to this." You know, not everyone's crazy. Not everybody is seeing things. Maybe mm-hmm. there is something to this. I mean, it's been going on for thousands and thousands of years, and people have been seeing ghosts or spirits.
Sure.
So there's maybe something to it. I think we're more in an open environment where we're more willing to accept these things.
Yeah.
That's what's doing it right now.
Yeah, I mean, 15 years ago, somebody would be like, "I don't want to talk about this because people are going to think I'm freaking crazy." But nowadays, it's like, people are like, you know, "Hey, I got a story to tell you." It's like, "All right, awesome. Tell me all about it."
Right. I mean, but years, like you said, years ago, like in my book, especially with my friends,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they're like coming out of the closet saying, "Hey, is it right if I talk to you about this?" You know, that type of thing. You know, they whisper to you about these things.
Yeah.
But, I mean, now, hey, like you said, they'll walk up to you, "Hey, I got a story to tell you," this type of thing. Once they find out you're involved in it,
mm-hmm.
you know, people run up and tell you, and it's great. I think it should be more open. I really do. Let's say, out of all the number of all the cases I've done, especially like in ghosts and hauntings of that nature,
mm-hmm.
I would say 95% of it is misidentification. You know, it could be.
Well, that's honest.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, people are being honest and not, you know, trying to play a hoax. Some do, yes, of course.
Yeah.
But people just misidentify things, you know, like maybe a house settling or an old plank in the wood or rodents in the wall or a train that goes by at 3 o'clock in the morning or a freight train that goes by at 3 o'clock in the morning and they don't know what that roar is, that, you know, that noise.
Right.
But then you have the ones that really have some substance to it and you really have to investigate those. That's the ones, the 5%, you know, that you really want to look into.
Right.
Yeah, that's about what I guess too. Was about 5% of.
Right. Yeah.
That seems.
I don't think it's more than that because there's too many things that you could misidentify. I mean, I had a friend back in Connecticut that he swore at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, while he was getting dressed, if he looked out across the way from his apartment, the reflection on the window was the Virgin Mary. You know, but he didn't realize that it was the sun, the way the sun was coming up in the morning. I said, "Did you ever see when it's raining?" He goes, "No, by the way, I never saw it when it was raining out." I said, "Well, a good chance it's just the sun, you know, that's just bouncing off that window." And then so he went to a different window, and he noticed it wasn't there. So it was the way he was in that one particular window where the reflection was. Just things like that, simple things that we don't realize.
Yeah.
Well, I know that I've figured it out. You know, I've been on a few investigations where it's like you hear this like this weird scratching in the walls, and then when you bring you bring like somebody in, it's like I happen to like home inspectors and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and you bring somebody like that in and they're listening and you know they got their equipment and they're looking into it and it's like, oh, you have a squirrel and you better get him out because he's going to be dying in your wall here sometime soon.
And that's going to smell good. Well, I told you the story about the family that had heard footsteps in their attic, and so we put a game camera up there for a month and came and got it a month later, and there was nothing on the game camera except for pictures of us putting it up and taking it down. However, what there were little rodent bite marks on the screws of the game camera.
That's I love that story. That's pretty hilarious.
Mystery solved.
That's right. Most of it gets solved. That's good. It's the ones that don't that make good for books, like on mine. There's some that I really couldn't just. I tried everything to knock it off, you know, knock it down or debunk it, but there was just not enough there for me to do it. I mean, it was there. There's really some strange ones.
So tell us a strange one.
Okay. Well. Let's see, one of my favorites, I always like to especially it's in a book, even though it's not so scary and things like that, was the one I have about my friend. I call him Arnold in a book. That's not his real name. But he was a fellow worker I used to work with back in Stamford, Connecticut. And he was a real good guy. He was from the West Indies. And a lot of times we would just hang around at coffee break or at lunchtime. We would just talk about different things. And he always would see I had either some book about ghosts on my desk or something about UFOs. And, you know, with kind of a smirk on his face, he says, "You believe in that stuff?" I says, "Well," I said, "you know, there might be something to it." I says, "You know, I've been following it, creeping it close, and there might be something to it." He goes, "Well, you know," he says, "where I come from, that's regular stuff. We do that all the time." I says, "Yeah. What do you mean?" He says, "Well," he says, "where I come from, you know, in Trinidad, that's we believe in the shaman and things." And he says, "Do you know what a shaman is?" I said, and I went to him and explained, "Yeah, I pretty much know what a shaman is." He said, "Well, do you believe that?" I said, "I don't know. It could be, it could be hit and miss, that type of thing." I said, I don't know if I really believe." And so he made like a smirky smile and laughed at me. He says, "How about if I prove it to you?" He said, "How about if I come to your house tonight?" Well, I'm skipping the part the way he explained to me how he became. I should go back. He explained to me that his father was like the chief shaman of the that's part of the island in Trinidad. Mm-hmm. You know, people came to him for all kinds of cures or even curses or whatever that type of nature. When he was a kid, he first noticed it. It was when he was like a town bully going around, you know, always beating up on people and, you know, taking people's things and that. And people were afraid of him. And one day, this town bully came running, driving through the town and hit a little girl with his car. And he didn't hurt her badly, but he did knock her down. And my friend, Arnold, said his father got so angry. He says, "This is enough. We know we had enough of this guy doing these things." He says he walked over to the car and my friend and I think he was about 9 years old when this is happening. He says he walked over to the car, and he just, as he was walking over, he was saying prayers in African, some type of an African language. Mm-hmm. And he walked over to the car, and without even opening the door with his hand, he said the door flew open, the car door flew, and the guy come flying out as if someone would throw him right out of the car, and he hit the ground. And he just put his hand out to the guy on the ground saying, "Don't you ever do these things again in this town, and I don't want you around here." He said the guy got on all fours like a dog and ran into the woods, just on all fours, just like an animal. And he said he left that part of the island. He never came back at that part of the island. He was so afraid of my friend's father. But going back to my friend wanting to prove that these things are true, he says, "You know, I can do... I can go out of my body whenever I want to." I says, "You got to be kidding me." He says, "Yeah, I could pretty much do that." Mm-hmm. I says, "Well," he says, "I'd like to see you do that." He says, "I'll tell you something." He says, "Tonight, I'll come and visit you at your house, and I'll tell you exactly what you're doing. And, you know, and I'll come back tomorrow and tell you what I saw. I says, if you can do that, I'll buy you lunch for the rest of the week. So he says, okay, we laughed, and he you know, went back to work and everything. That night, almost completely forgot about it. I, you know, was in my apartment, and then my wife had gone to bed. She didn't want to watch the Monday Night Football. So I was there watching the football game, and I didn't think anything about it. You know, like I said, well, everything was quiet. And after the game, I went in, back to bed, got up the next morning, got to work early, and to my surprise, he was already there. Arnold's already sitting there having his coffee. And he says, I says, well, where were you last night? Expect you to see. He says, I was there. I says, yeah, you were there. I said, you tell me. He says, hey, he says, I will tell you. He says, he told me. He said it was around 8:30 or 9 o'clock, something like that. He had gone to his, like, an easy chair. He says he sat down in it, and he started to do, like, a meditation.
Mm-hmm.
He says, then he found himself starting to leave his body and going through the ceiling. He looked down. He could see his body going through the ceiling and going out into this night. And now he lives in Brooklyn, New York. And I live in at that time, I lived in Norwalk, Connecticut. And that's quite a distance.
Okay.
Yeah. And he said, you know, he saw the lights. He saw the Long Island Sound. And he's crossing over. And he says he headed to where he thought Norwalk, Connecticut was. Now, he never been to my house. So he didn't know where Norwalk, Connecticut was. I don't know how he got there, supposedly. So he flew, well, whatever he did, he got there. And he says, as he came in, he says, he noticed I had a Dodge Ram Charger. It looked like an SUV, an old SUV.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw that in the backyard, parked in the backyard of the apartment where I lived. So he said, well, I must be at the right place. And he just went in. And he says he noticed that my living room, which was kind of odd, I didn't have an easy chair. I didn't have an armchair, but I had two sofas. And I had a TV on a TV, one of those little TV tables, you know, that you used to eat your meals on, those little things.
Oh, yeah.
I had my TV on that. And he's telling me all these things. And he says, your wife was sleeping. And he says, and all of a sudden, I can tell you, he says, you were watching a football game. And he says, and he said that he gave me the score of the game. And he says, it was at halftime. I said, you saw this? He says, yes. He says, I saw this. I said, wow. I said, I don't know. It's hard to believe that you did this. He says, well, he says, how else? He says, plus, he says, did you notice something strange this morning when you went to work? And I started thinking. I says, uh-huh, yeah, I did notice something strange. I said, well, you tell me what I saw that was strange. He says, yeah. He says, I'll tell you what I saw. He said, I saw a cannonball. He says, I took a cannonball that was on the front porch of the people who owned the house where I lived in the apartment. He took that cannonball and moved it to the back stairway where our apartment was. And I don't know how he did that. I don't know how he did that. And he did. I was in awe when he told me this.
Mm.
And ever since then, I used to call him, he became my witch doctor. I used to call him Doc. From then on, he was always Doc. Because that was an incredible thing.
I have a friend who can do that. It is pretty amazing, isn't it?
But, you know, I've tried, but I don't know. I guess I can't get myself into that stage or that...
Me either.
Part of your body where you can just totally relax.
No,
I think it's a skill.
It is. It must be. Because he says he was doing it for years. He was doing it for years. And I think he said that his mother had taught him that.
No.
That part.
Frank, do you think... Oh, sorry. I interrupted you, sir. I was just going to say, do you think that that's kind of, you know, what we refer nowadays as remote viewing?
Yes. Yeah, that'd be to me... I would call that like a remote viewing. Yes.
Okay.
I would, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now we have two types of remote viewing. You got the one we can do the out of body experience type, but then there's the one that I know they tried many times. The government, like the CIA and people, NSA,
Project Stargate.
Exactly. Like trying to get these people. I mean, they actually don't physically leave, but they can see. I mean. When you speak to these people, they tell you they don't leave their body, but they can actually see that area. To me, that's more of a remote viewing than out-of-body experience. But it's basically the same type of thing, only they don't go out of their body.
Well, I the out-of-body thing, I think that you have to have a lot of trust in the universe for that, too. I would be afraid because I have such a terrible sense of direction. I'd get out of my body and never find my way back.
Yeah, that's what I asked him. I said, how did you know? He says, I just put my mind. He says, I said, Norwalk, Connecticut. He says, and I just put that in my mind. And he said, my body just went that way. He said, it just went that way. When I said, no, he said, Norwalk, Connecticut, his body went that way. And then he says, Frank's house. And then it went that way. Like I said, I don't know how they do that. It's a great skill. I don't know how he did it. But he was able to find my apartment, and he had never been there before. That was really strange. I'm sure he did that because I don't think he has the great, ability to think that way, that he could see remote viewing type. I don't know. He said he actually went out of his body to do that.
Yeah.
Well, he moved something, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, so to me, that says, yeah. So see, here's what I wonder is that I know that there are people who can do this consciously, and I know there are people who do it accidentally. And I often wonder if some of the things that people encounter as ghosts are really just somebody who's living, who's doing the out-of-body thing, either accidentally or on purpose.
Wow, Karen, I'll tell you. I'm starting to learn about these, what they call different dimensions. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying is, I'm hearing a lot of what people are saying is exactly what you're talking about, that people are, not only do they see ghosts in these dimensions and aliens or whatever, spirits, but they're also seeing people who are out of their body for that, that moment, actually doing an OBE, an out-of-body experience, moving out of their body. Again, this is like a new area for me, and I'm just starting to learn about it. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing how many people that I've come across to say that they know about these things, and that some have already experienced these things. I can't say to them, prove it to me. They say you just have to be in that conscious. You have to be in the conscious where you can absorb all these things. He says, otherwise, you won't feel it. He says,
right.
You have to have your body in such a state.
Well, I wonder if some of those really vivid dreams are actually out-of-body experiences.
According to my research, they are.
That would be, if I did it, it would be accidental.
Well, you know, you really don't try to do it. It is, most in cases, accidental. It's the people who have the ability, who are familiar with, like I said, with this meditation process, this yoga process, where they can put their body in such a state. But like myself and you, we would probably have a hard time doing something like that. It would be more in the case of an accident. Well, here's a good example. You must have had some deja vu experiences in your life, right?
Oh absolutely.
Yeah.
But again, that's what it is. From what I'm understanding, it's your body that at one time had gone somewhere and done this thing, either in this life or in a past life, that you're experiencing these things. Now, a good example is on my honeymoon. Years before, I always had this dream that I was on an island coming around this road on this truck, sitting on the back of a truck with a bunch of people, almost like migrant workers, mm-hmm. Going around this old rickety road. And all of a sudden, I would see this beautiful ocean, and in the ocean there would be this almost like a giant, bigger than a boulder, almost a mountain-sized formation out there. And it always wowed me. I said, wow, that's something. 3 years later, we decide to go, I get married, we decide to have a honeymoon, and we go to St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And so we said, well, let's go into town. Let's go into Charlotte, Lamia, and, go into town and, do a little tourist type of stuff. And I said, okay. So we says, let's get a taxi. So we went to the front desk and said, could we get a taxi? He says, he says, the bus comes right here. It takes you right into town. I said, bus? He says, yeah. He says, we have a bus that takes you to town. It stops at the different hotels, and it'll stop right here. So here comes this truck, right? Like I said, an open bed back up with a bunch of bench seats. It was like migrant workers. We step in it. Now, I'm not thinking about my deja vu dream. I'm not thinking about that. But then we're starting to drive up these roads. And all of a sudden, I'm coming up to this hill where the dirt road is. All of a sudden, my dream starts kicking in.
Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute. You've been here. And as we come around a turn, there's that mountain in the middle of the ocean just sticking up. I go to my wife. God, you wouldn't believe it. I says, I dreamt of this place. I've been here before. And she says, you're crazy. I'm telling you, I've seen this place before. And I says, as we come down the hill, I bet you down here there's another hotel we're going to stop at. I mean, there's plenty of hotels on the island, of course, but
sure.
Who would think that, really, right at the bottom of the hill, there was another hotel where we stopped at. It was amazing.
Cool. Now,
like I said, a lot of people have these deja vus, and that's part of your either a past life or experiencing an out-of-body, an out-of-body experience.
Well, I absolutely do believe in past lives, and I do think that we remember more of them than we realize.
Yeah, and again, this new phase I'm working on here, this new dimensions and new age era that I'm working on. It's saying that you can remember. It just needs the little triggers to get that. You just need to trigger that little bit, and you'll start remembering your past lives. Now, if you notice, most children, most past lives happen with kids.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. These stories, they most happen with kids. And what they're trying to say, what other psychologists, parapsychologists are trying to say, is that what happened is the spirit what came into this body had not gone through the... It's almost like a process where you go and you get like a brainwash type of thing.
Right.
You get brainwashed. You forget entirely what happened. Now, years ago, they used to think that occurred when a woman would have her natural childbirth, as it goes through the canals and everything. That's when you would lose all the memory from your previous lives.
Mm-hmm.
But they disproved that when they start doing cesareans. Even the people who had cesarean would remember some of their past lives. They had kids who were born cesarean. They would remember their past lives.
Right.
But in a kid's case, is that they haven't had the chance, or they didn't have the time to really forget about everything. So they remember.
Right.
They start to remember little by little. And the good part about it is that by the age of, I would say, the ages between 7 and 12, they start to forget.
Right.
Then they start to say, I don't remember that. Like in India. India's famous for having people with past lives.
Oh, I know. I've read a lot of cases India stuff.
Yeah. And then most times what they do there, over there it's pretty much accepted. But what they do is when the child claims to have a past life, they try to find the former person or relative or whatever, bring it to them. They somehow find them, and they bring it to him, and then what happens, they meet, and then from that point on, he just starts to lose all of his past life, all his past memory of the other life.
Huh.
Yeah, it's pretty much open there.
I tell a story that my son, when he was 3, he's 16 now, and he doesn't remember this conversation, but sorry, my dogs are barking. When my son was 3, I asked him, I just said to him, tell me about before I was your mom, and that was all I said. And his eyes lit up like he'd been waiting for me to answer this question. And he said,
right.
And he started telling me this complex story about being a doctor on a boat. You should try it with Theo when he's a little more verbal, Rick.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I definitely want to. I wanted to ask you about that, Frank, though, is that it seems to me that a lot of these beliefs and the acceptance, they're a little bit more... accepted in indigenous societies, where they're at, shamans, witch doctors, what have you. Now, do you think because we live in more of a Eurocentric kind of a world that we just say these things can't possibly exist? I mean, are they stronger in indigenous societies?
I would think so. For a few reasons. First of all, they're a more close-knit society than we have.
Right.
Exposed to the other elements that we're always exposed to, all different news stories, who's dying there, who's getting shot in Vietnam or whatever, that type of thing. They're not exposed to all those outside things, so they tend to keep it more knit to themselves. Mm-hmm. And their beliefs, they just, it just gets passed on. And they're, you know, like I said, I'm getting just into this new age type of thing. I always thought it was kind of crazy and things, but with this 2012 thing coming along, I joined this group here, you know, up here in Michigan, that that's what they do. They read up on this. They want to experience this new age that's coming. It's supposed to be a, well, they're saying that the you know, the Mayan calendar is going to end the world. Well, it's going to end the world. They're telling me it's going to end the world the way we know it. It's only going to get better. People are going to be more attuned to what's going on with the world and with the earth. And then they like you're saying, it's those type of people, like the shamans, that keep giving that information to their people, their close-knit communities, and they believe in it. So yeah. I do believe that that there's something to that. I really do.
You know, we are going to take a break here in a couple minutes, but sure. there is a question from the chat room, and it's from Elaine Davidson from WOOPI, and we're going to go back to the remote viewing thing. She wants to know. So, according to your research, can someone? Hang on, I gotta go back up here. Sorry about
that. I've got it. Do you want me to ask?
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry about that.
She wants to know if someone can tell, be pulled into a remote viewing experience just by telling a story or being told a story.
That's a good question. Do you want to wait to get back from the break, or you want me to give my opinion now?
Give your opinion now, and then we'll go to break.
Sure.
I think they can. I think they can really be pulled into it. I've read where people have actually been pulled into dreams from other people, another person had a dream, and then the other person said, you know what, that's funny, because I had that same dream. They'll come back and say, you know what, I had that same dream the other night, and I saw you in that dream. And it's that factor where you can pull. The subconscious can do quite a few things. It can do just enormous amount of things that more than we know. The brain, like they say, the brain can do more than we think can do. Mm-hmm. It's just that we don't use it enough.
Yeah, but I agree with that.
Yeah, but the subconscious is even greater than the brain. So my feeling is I would agree with. I think it can. I think it would be you could be pulled in to another out of body experience or into another dream. I really do.
Mm. Okay, so with that, let's do this. We will take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Stick around. We'll be talking to Frank about maybe some UFOs when we come back, so stick around.
First there came radio, and it was good. Then it got bad. Then there came satellite radio, and it was okay. Then it got too expensive and kind of sucked. Now there is something new, something better, something free. Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. With Stitcher, you can hear all the shows and podcasts you can imagine, rate them, and build your own station. No downloading, no syncing, no problem. Just pick a station to get started, like American news and politics. Now, look at the shows you have to pick from, pick one, and start listening. Like it, make a favorite, and start your own station. Don't like it? Thumb it down and say bye-bye to shows like it. Or thumb it up to find more like it. Plus, you can search and find your favorite podcasts. We have over 1,000 shows to pick from. Stitcher Radio, the natural evolution in audio listening. And it's free.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
On the go and missing another one of your favorite Z-Talk shows? Now you don't have to. Simply go to the Google Play Store on your Android phone and download the Z-Talk Radio app. The best part is, it's absolutely free. That's Z-Talk Radio, only found in your Google Play Store on your Android phone. Download it today.
Why the words you say, you're not the big one. This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are your hosts, Karen and Rick. For the last hour, we have been talking to Frank Santariga, parapsychologist as well as UFO researcher, having a fascinating conversation. He's a great guy. So, you know, thanks again, you know, Frank, for being on the show, and thanks for sticking around for another segment.
Oh, you're welcome.
So we had a question in chat, and actually I think it's fantastic because it is a great way to transition into a conversation about UFOs. And so Mike in chat wants to know if the craft your brother saw in Yonkers and the one he saw in Poughkeepsie, do you believe that those were the same? And sorry, the chat moved. And what did you think the red balls were, and what do you think they were? So if you could sort of tell that story and then answer that question, that'd be awesome.
Sure, yeah. Again, the first instance that I can remember that my brother had seen the craft was when he was coming out of the... he works for the post office in Yonkers, New York. and he was coming out of the post office, and he saw this object, which he thought was a star, a very bright star, ahead of him. Mm. And as they were walking through the to the parking lot, him and his friend, he was wondering that you know, it's kind of odd that this big bright star is, you know, around all the other stars, and it's just really sticking out. And they were walking close, and he noticed it, like, getting brighter and brighter. As he got to the car, just joking around, my brother Al says, he said to his friend, "Watch this." And what he did was flash his lights three times. The star, now the object, flashed back three times also.
Mm.
And when his friend saw that, he says, "Stop that." He says, "I'm getting out of here. I don't want to see these things." So he got in the car. But before anything else happened, they looked and they saw the thing had, it had dropped, you know, three red balls or something to that nature, or orbs. And before it hit the ground, it would come down. And just before it hit the ground, they would disappear. Three. He says, about like 15 seconds apart, that one would come down, then another would come down. But they would disappear before they would hit the ground. And they were, you know, looking at that. When they went back to look up to see where the object was, it had disappeared. It had gone. So looking around, my brother had a sense to look straight up above his head. When he looked above his head, the object was right above them. It was a triangular shape. Yeah, it was right above them. Maybe he said a couple hundred feet above their heads. It was a triangle, and it moved very slowly. And when it did turn, it was almost like on an axis. The point would, you know, the point of the triangle would stay, and the whole back would move, and the point would stay right in one spot. And it slowly drifted away. And, you know, it scared the living daylights out of them, you know, what it was. Now, 10 years later, my brother has just gotten out of a karate class or Chai Tin, whatever they call it. Him and his daughter have just gotten out of the class, and they're in Hopewell Junction, New York, and they're heading back to LaGrange, or Poughkeepsie. It's a little town outside of Poughkeepsie, New York. It's only maybe about 15, maybe 20 miles from Hopewell to LaGrange. As they're, heading home, Amanda, which is Al's daughter, says, "Dad, I think we have a UFO following us." And Al, you know, says, "Where?" You know, she says, "Back there." And he turned around, you know, while he was driving, he looked at his eye, it's probably a plane, because they were close to one of the local airports. He says, "It's probably just a plane." And he kept going. And she said, "Dad, it's getting closer, and it's still following us." So he pulled over on the side of the road. And he was looking at it, and he says, "Well," and the thing stopped, too. Now, it's far away. It's still just like a light to him. He can't distinguish anything much to it because it's that far away. But it stopped. So he's thinking, "Well, you know what? Maybe it's the helicopter. If it stopped, maybe a helicopter." He says, "Well, I'll drive up a ways and see what happens." As they come to the fork in the road where one goes to the airport and one goes towards Al's house back in LaGrange, he noticed that he doesn't see the object any longer. Now, they pull in their driveway in LaGrange. As he gets out, both him and his daughter look up, and there it is. It's right there over his house. The center of it is over his house. The back of it is over his neighbor's house, and the front part of it is over the other neighbor's house. So it's taken up almost, he said, about 300 feet. Yeah, huge, just huge.
Okay.
And he said to his daughter, he said, "Go in, call Mom. You know, go in, call Mom." So she runs in to call, you know, Al's wife to come out. And she comes out. She says, "Oh, my God, what's that?" And he goes, "Go." He says, "Go get," this is the funny part, he says, "Go get my mag light and my flashlight," he says, "and he's got a sword. He has his big samurai sword. He says, go get my flashlight, get my sword, and get the dog." He's got a
German. Yeah, that's going to do something.
Maybe he should have got his lightsaber, too.
Yeah, I think a lightsaber would have been more effective.
Yeah, oh, that was funny. But anyway, he says, "I'm going to go see what this thing is," because it floated by then. It had floated, it followed the power lines, and it had floated down the street into the wooded area, but he could still see this plain as day. So he tells his wife, he says, "Look, if I'm not back in a half hour, you call the cops." He says, "I'm going to go and see what this thing is." So he's heading down that way, and he's watching it, and again, he has the mag light and he flashes it a few times and it flashes back, you know, gives him a single back. As he's getting closer, he starts noticing again the three red orbs dropping. Again, just three. And it doesn't look like it hits the ground. They go out before it hits the ground, he says. They just sort of switch off.
Yeah.
So then he noticed that it picked up speed and it started floating away. So he ran to see where if he could find anything, you know, the orbs or whatever might have happened, where it left. You know, if anything dropped, any kind of evidence, anything. But he says that he looked around for quite a while and couldn't find anything. So he headed back, and then his wife, you know, she says, "Oh, good, thank God you're back." She says, "I was just about to call the police because I thought you were gone and taken away or something." He says, "No, I'm back." But he said it took maybe, he was out there for about a good hour before it was cold. It was like in January, so he didn't want to stay out too much longer. But right. It was strange. I said, "Well, did you think it was like?" He says, "Frank," he says, "it was exactly like the one that I saw back in Yonkers from the post office. It was exactly."
Wow.
I said, "Do you think they're following you?" He goes, "I don't want to know."
No.
He goes, "I don't want to know." I says, "You should really think about getting regressive hypnosis."
Yeah, well, you know, it makes me think about high strangeness.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so has he experienced any other things that would, you know, smack of high strangeness?
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, my brother could write a book on his own, all the things he's experienced with the shamans and stones that look like aliens. Oh, I may put that into a book. I might write another one, just add that and things in. But he's been experiencing quite a few things for a long time.
I'll be darned.
Huh. I think he has a little bit of what my mom had. You know, that kind of, I don't know even what to call it. I don't want to call it a blessing or I don't know what it is, but it has that psychic power or something.
It's a gift. It's a gift.
Yeah. Sometimes you might want to say it's a gift or God knows what it is. But he does experience all those things. Now, again, the UFO counter over Connecticut, the Hudson Valley, that was that was a real big one. Before that, he never believed in UFOs. I mean, he used to laugh at me, thought it was a joke. He said, "What, are you kidding me? You believe in this crap?"
Who got the last laugh now, huh?
Yeah, that's what I said. I mean, I don't know if you had a chance to read that particular story about him, the Connecticut UFO, but that's it. The last laugh, you know, it was on him. I got the laugh too, because he was there. I mean, not only him. We're talking about hundreds of people stopped on a major highway, the Merritt Parkway in Connecticut. Hundreds of people, just stopped. Everybody looking up, looking at this thing that's taking over. It goes from one end of the highway, even into the woods, goes all across the woods, over the highway, over the 7 divider, over all four lanes, and over until almost there's a motel on the other side of the exit there. It almost reached there. He said, his description was it. He says it was as if you were looking at a football stadium upside down. It was that huge. He said it was that deep. It was that tall. He said it was like 6 stories tall inside. He said with hundreds and hundreds of lights in there. He said you could see the structural, the work, almost like all the structural work going on in it. And it was just amazing. I said, "Did you hear anything?" He said, "You couldn't hear a sound." He said, "You didn't hear anything." He said, "There was no sound at all." And which really, fooled me. And the investigations I've done, when the UFO was, pretty close, pretty that low, there's usually disturbance with the trees. The trees go crazy. They swirl or branches fall. He said there wasn't even one leaf moving. He said it was just dead still.
Now, Frank.
Yes.
I was just going to ask that. Actually, our producer has a question for you.
Sure.
Now, with all of these UFOs that you have investigated, and of course with the Hudson Valley, which was quite possibly one of the top five, anyways, in my opinion, greatest sightings in the history of modern ufology. Have you ever had to deal, or do you know anybody who's ever had to deal with being contacted by the infamous, sinister, notorious Men in Black?
It's funny that you mentioned.
Okay.
The Men in Black. The Men in Black, they were, you know, it was that term was invented by a person from Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the guy's name. I think it was Lender or something like that. But anyway, he was. It was back in the early 50s when they were just starting the, you know, the UFOs were just
Bender.
Starting to come. At the, yeah, they were seeing them over Washington and things like that nature. He has just started a little group, a UFO group, you know, people who were interested in about that and were, you know, looking into UFOs. And he kept on talking about it. He got more people to join his group. And then all of a sudden, he says, one day, the two guys come to this meeting dressed in black and told mm-hmm. him, we don't like what you're doing. You got to stop what you're doing. And that's where supposedly the term Men in Black. After that, he was scared stiff, so he dismantled the group. He still worked with UFOs. I'm trying to think of the guy's name. God, I knew it. I'm trying to think of his name. But he was the one who did the UFO. I think one's Lender. Alan Lender.
Bender.
Albert Bender, yeah.
Al Bender, that's who it was, yes. Al Bender. But as far as people who've, I know people that who've been, I don't want to say abducted, but taken. There's, I don't want to mention any names. I can't do that without asking the person. But I can tell you that I know of a person that is visited regularly. Now, he's told me that the people, there is two groups that visit him. There's one, and this is, again, this is kind of hard for me, too, to understand. There's a group that he calls, like, a reptilian group.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they're supposed to be, like, reptiles in the form of reptiles. And then there's the famous, you know, aliens, the Greys.
The Greys, sure.
Greys. He tells me that the Greys are more or less the... I don't want to say little slaves, but you know they're like little robots, but they're
like drones or something.
Yeah, like that, something like that. But they're actually they do have a biology.
Okay. You know,
they're not mechanical. They're not electrical. They're actually some kind of a biological.
Or cyborg.
Yes, an entity, something like that. But they're the ones that tend to do the examinations most of the time. Are the Greys. He says that the reptilians pretty much are always asking him questions, different questions of what they ask him things that they can't understand our personalities for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
They can't understand our thoughts, the way we think. They're trying to trying to come to that.
So Frank, I don't understand how we think half the time. So
yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say I don't.
I wish him luck, right?
I must be a reptile.
But he says that's what they ask him. They're pretty much, he said they're pretty much kind of thwarted, mean type of person, type of entity. There, he said they're very tall.
Mm-hmm.
They go from anywhere from 8 to 9 feet tall. Again, I don't have a picture of it. I can't say, yeah, you know, this is true. I saw it myself. But, you know, but I'm just telling you, I've heard from different people of these two types. I know there's more than two types, supposedly. There's like 40 or something like that. But I've heard of numerous people tell me about reptilian and of the Greys. So,
yeah.
Are they here to harm us? I mean, if they were, I think they would have done it by now.
I tend to agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, I think they would have done away with us a long time ago if they wanted to.
Yeah. You know what makes me feel? Sometimes I get the feeling that we were an experiment that went bad. We were put here as an experiment, and we went bad somehow. And they're trying to find out what went wrong. I don't know. I get that feeling sometimes, that's why they come by here all the time.
We have another question in chat. Let me find it. I'm sorry. I'm going to do a quick change of subject, because we always try to get the chat questions out there. So, Mike, wanted to know about the story about the Ouija board in your book, and
keep
saying things in chat, so it keeps skipping back down to the bottom. He wants to know how a board game made by Milton Bradley can be a porthole to another dimension, and do you believe that they're actually real? And if you could, you know, tell the story from your book, that'd be great too.
Okay. First of all, Milton Bradley didn't make it. I mean, the Ouija board's been out there for hundreds and hundreds of years. It was only done in different formats, in different forms.
Right.
Milton Bradley made it into like a board that you could fold up, put in the box, and take it where you want. So it's been out there for years, Mike. It's been out there for a long, long time. I would say at least before the... I want to say before even the Egyptians, it's been out for thousands and thousands of years. But, you know, again, it's Milton Bradley that put it into a box so you could take it home and play with it. But you don't want to play with it. Like I say in the book, this is not a game, a child's game. It is not a child's game. I thought the same way. I thought, well, yeah, this is fun. We could do this. But it never worked for me. I can't tell why it doesn't work for me, but it never worked for me. It does? See, with you, again, you probably got some kind of psychic powers. I know I don't.
I do, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see? But it didn't work for me. But, again, I was at work, and one of the fellows, you know, they knew I did this type of investigation. And I hardly ever talked to this one fellow, and he said to me, he says, do you think there'd be a chance that there is, oh, no, he came up to me and said, I'm having a lot of, he says, my wife's having a lot of problems at home. She's having these recurring dreams and nightmares, and it's making her very upset. She's not herself. I says, well, you know, I'm trying to remember the name I gave him in a book. I don't want to use his real name. But I asked him, I says, do you think maybe she should see a psychiatrist or even a psychologist to see what her problems might be? I said, I'm not really one, you know, to do that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, well, you know, she was talking to her friend, and those dreams her friend's saying are, you know, something to do with someone trying to get in contact with her, and her friend says not to go see doctors, but to see a psychic or a medium. I said, well, I'm not a psychic or a medium. I says, so I really can't help you there. He says, but you told me, he says, I heard that you worked with the Ouija boards and you've used them in, you know, in your work. I says, I did. I says, but, you know, but it still doesn't make me a psychic or a medium. I says, whatever comes out on comes out. I don't have that power. He says, just do me a favor. He says, can you come over to my house Friday night and, you know, see what you can do? Can you bring the board? He says, I really need your help. I said, all right. I said, it's not a problem. I said, I'll come over, you know, and I'll see what we'll do, you know, we can do about it. So, Friday night comes along, and my wife came along with us, and I didn't want to tell her why we were going there, because my wife does not like anything to do with the paranormal. Even though she experiences things, she does not like to do it. She feels it's more of an evil thing than anything, and I'm trying to tell her it's not evil.
Well, but a lot of people feel that way, especially if they have really strong religious convictions.
Yes, and she does, and that's what makes it that way. She has very, you know, strong religious background, and she's very religious, and that's what makes it that way. But anyway, she did come along, and I told her, you know, going over to my friend's house, and you know, just to have a cup of coffee and talk with him. And then we get there, you know, we introduce each other, and he introduces me to his wife, She started talking to me. She says, "I says, Bob tells me you're having, you know, some nightmares." She goes, "Oh, she says, they're terrible. They're terrible." I said, "Well, what, you know, how did it all start? What's it about?" She goes, "Well, I got a call from my sister in Vermont a couple of days ago saying that my father had passed away, and she wants to know if I'm going to come up for the funeral." And I started screaming at her because I hated my father. Because he treated us terrible. He was a drunk. He used to beat my mother. He used to beat us. I hated him. I couldn't wait till I get him to move out of that house. She says, I wouldn't go anywhere where that guy is. She goes, I hope he rots in hell. And she started crying. You know, she was really upset. I said, well, what's these dreams about then? Can you tell me? She says, well, these dreams are that I'd be sleeping, and then my father comes to my bed, and he taps me on the shoulder, and he says, "Can you please forgive me? Please forgive me. I'm so sorry for what I did." And she goes, "In my dream, I just yell at him and swear at him and tell him, get out of here and don't ever come back here. I don't want to see you. You're making my life miserable." And then, she wakes up right away in the night, like in sweats. So this is, mm-hmm. goes on for a couple of nights. And then she says, "I was working in the kitchen, getting ready for dinner, making dinner." And he says, "I feel this presence on my side." Oh, she goes, "By my side." I turn around, and I could feel that it's my father still there asking for forgiveness. She goes, "He's just driving me crazy." He says, "Even he's dead, and he's even driving me crazy. Because I can't stand it anymore." She goes, "That's why I'm like this." So she says, "Well, I was hoping that my friend was telling me that maybe you can do something with this weak board, and we can tell him to get out of my life and things." I says, "Well, we can try." I says, "But I can't guarantee it." I says, "First of all, I'm not going to touch it because it just doesn't work with me." I says, I just don't know, but it doesn't move when I touch it. I says, "And I can't have your husband do it because he knows too much about you. So he may influence the placenta, the pointer, going to from letter to letter. So I can't have him." So I look at my wife, says, "Hun, do you mind?" And I could see right through her eyes, she wanted to choke me. Because she really doesn't want to touch those things. That's so evil to her, right? But she felt so bad for the woman. She said, "All right, I'll do it." So they proceeded, to say, "Is there anyone here?" And then it went out and spelled out, "Dad." And she goes, like she said, "How I know it's you?" And I think he spelled out something like a little nickname he had for her. Mm-hmm. And then you can see her eyes drop and her face turn, like, "Oh my God, this is really him." And then she goes, she asks, "What do you want?" And it's spelled out, "Forgiveness." She started crying again. She goes, "You got to stop this. You're driving me crazy. You can't do this." So she turns to me and says, she goes, "Frank, what do you want me to do?" I says, "Forgive." I says, "You got to forgive." I says, "The other side is nothing but love. People just love there. There's no evil. Don't believe anything. It's all love. It's just forgive him. Forgive him." And so she goes, "Okay, I forgive you." And then it goes out and spells out, like, "Thank you." And then I forgot what it said. It said, "Thank you, love, Dad." And then it kept going. It said, "And Mom." So what I'm surmising is that not only was he there, but her mother was there. And you could see, after that was done, you could see her face. She just, like, it was like something you see on TV, like a werewolf. Her face just changed. She got so, her color came back to her face. She had old dark eyes. That changed. Her red eyes had gone. They were white. The insides were perfectly white. And you could see the whole atmosphere of her changed. And even in the house, because when I first walked into that house, I didn't feel comfortable. For some reason, I just didn't feel comfortable. But after that session, everything felt better. Everything just felt better. So she says, "I feel so much better." I says, I "bet you do." She goes, "I do. I feel so much better." She goes, "Let's have a cup of coffee." So we went to the coffee, the dining room to have a cup of coffee. So we're sitting there, we're talking about other things. And all of a sudden, I see her looking, like, over my shoulder. I'm facing her, right? And she's facing the living room where we had the Ouija board. Mm-hmm. And I see her looking past me towards where the Ouija board is. And I turn around, and I said, "What's going on?" She goes, "I see the thing moving." I said, "You see what?" She goes, "I see the thing moving." And she gets up, and she gets ready to go. I grab her by the arm. I said, "Wait, get over here." I said, "Just don't ever, ever touch it when it's moving by itself." She goes, "Why? Why?" I said, "If you remember, what was the last thing your dad said? He said he loved you, and and your mom said loved you, and they said goodbye. When you said goodbye, that's it. They're gone."
You close that communication.
Yeah, exactly. So what you're seeing now is probably something that shouldn't be brought in. Just do not touch that board.
Yeah.
Let it be. And eventually, it stopped moving. I mean, it was moving erratically. You know, like it wasn't stopping at a letter or something. It was just moving erratically. It was spinning like a top. But it wasn't actually stopping at certain letters.
But
I still didn't want her to touch it. I said, please, don't touch it. I packed it up, put it in the box, and I just left and we finished our coffee. And the next morning, I got up. First thing I did was go out to the backyard, dug a 2-foot hole, put the board in it, threw some gasoline on it, burnt it, and buried it. That was the last time I ever touched a Ouija board.
See, now, so here's something that somebody told me. When something like that happens, if you burn it, you could trap whatever's coming through here, and so you're supposed to put it in water.
Now, see, that's one I never heard.
Yeah, I know. Water. Well, it's just interesting. Different belief systems, I guess, huh?
Right. And don't you know, I actually had a yardstick, and I measured 2 feet, because that's what I was told. So I want to make sure it's 2 feet deep. That's really strange. No, I never heard about that. I have to see if I could find something like that.
Yeah, so I don't know. I suppose it's all, you know, there's nothing concrete. There's nothing. There's no proof. There's no...
Right.
It's just interesting that, you know, that you heard one thing, and because I was somewhere and we came across like some stuff that looked like somebody had done like some kind of weird summoning ceremony, and I didn't like the stuff. I didn't like it at all. It upset me, and so I burned it. And my friend, who is a Wiccan, or actually she does a Santeria.
Yes, she said, Santeria. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she said you never ever burn that stuff. You always,
that's what I've heard too.
Yeah, put it in water.
Is it holy water or is it just plain water?
I think just water. Yeah.
Oh. Well, see,
but you know what? I was just going to say with holy water, that gives it that extra credit.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I would. Yeah. Well, that's something new. I never ever heard that, and I'm surprised. Yeah. But I've always, I guess, because once I've heard fire, you know, burning it and burying it, that's always stick to my mind. I thought that was the only way to do it. But that's something. That's something. I'll have to ask some of these psychics I know around here.
I don't know. I would imagine different traditions, different ways of doing things.
Oh yeah. Because I just, you know, I was just at one of the meetings the other night, and one of the psychics was telling me she was doing a house cleansing, and that she was going from the four corners of the house. She was using the sage at each four corners of the house.
Yeah.
Then I had another one. Another psychic said, "Well, you're supposed to do it in four corners of every room." Then I had another one say, "No, you're supposed to do four corners of the property." I was, oh my God, this is getting confusing.
You just walk through the house with the burning sage. That's what you do.
Yeah, that's what I said too. Just, I said, go to room, say a prayer.
Yeah, that's what I do. Is I go room to room with it when I do sage in my house because I like to. I just think it cleanses the energy, and I follow it up with sweetgrass. And I walk every room and go in every part of every room.
Yeah. That's what I found too. People do. Most people do that. Every room, and just go to every room. But it was funny because 3 different opinions came up at the same time.
Well, but see, there's nothing. There's very little that's. I mean, so much of what we do is trial and error anyway.
Yes.
And again, you have rituals that different faiths have different rituals and different belief systems. And, you know, and the thing that always I think is interesting about cleansing is that I hear all these paranormal groups who say, okay, well, we went in and we cleansed it and we got rid of the spirits. And I say, okay, well, what'd you do to cleanse it? Well, we had a Native American drum ceremony. Well, how do you know the spirits are Native American?
Mm.
Well, we had a Catholic blessing. Well, how do you know the spirits were Catholic?
Right.
And what if they're an atheist who just, you know, was like, oh my God, I'm a ghost.
It's true. Yeah, you know, different people do different things. The Indians, right, and then the priests, of course. There's one incident it's not in my book, but I was following up on it. It was one of the first times that it was occurring that I was a paranormal person. I don't know if you ever heard of the Warrens.
Oh, sure.
Warren.
Yeah. Everybody's heard of the Warrens.
Okay, yeah.
Whether or not you think they're hokey or not, you know.
Well, you know, I know them pretty, well, I used to know Ed very well before he passed away. But I don't think they're hokey. I do think, though, that people do take advantage of them, like book writers and, you know, TV script writers. They do dramatize a lot of the stuff they do. So, yeah. But I do think, definitely, I know that Lorraine does have psychic powers. I know that Ed was really a steadfast demonologist. He really believed that, you know, the devil's around and we got to keep them out of our event. So he was. But they were doing a, again, this was back in Bridgeport, Connecticut, many, many years ago. They were at a house where a young girl was supposedly possessed with some kind of demons. And they did the same like you're saying. Should we bring Indians in? Because that part of the street in Bridgeport belonged to the, I think the Pequot Indians back in these days. Should we bring in a shaman to do something with, or should we bring in the priest, you know, from the local archdiocese down the street because the girl's Catholic? It was that type of thing. And then finally, Lorraine says, why don't we just say a prayer and see what happens? unfortunately, whatever they did didn't work because they wind up moving out of the house, whatever was haunting that house, whoever's possessing that house.
But well, you know, the thing about cleansings is that every time I don't watch a lot of paranormal television, but when I do watch it, it seems like every time they're like, okay, well, let's have somebody bless the house now. And as soon as they do that, I think, no, because the next thing that's going to happen is things are going to go quiet for a few minutes or a few days, and then it's going to blow up and be even worse than it ever was before.
Well, yeah, you know, I was just going to, yeah. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, go ahead, Frank.
No. I'm just saying that I've heard that. I mean, people think they walk away thinking it's done, and then 2 or 3 weeks later, this starts up again.
Yeah. And usually worse, stronger.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, one of the people, I think I told you that about the paranormal witness, they were thinking about doing something on my book. Well, I had met somehow on one of these chat groups, I had met one person who had a story done on her. Her name was Jody Foster out in California. It was about an apartment she had, and supposedly, you know, at the end, everything's supposed to be nice. And but she says, "Hell no, it didn't end like that." She says, "I had to move out because a month later it started up again. Everything started going crazy again. Her kid was screaming at night, waking up with nightmares." She says, "We had to move out of that apartment." So, like you're saying, you know, it's not all fixed and done, you know, when the guy comes in and does the blessing or whatever, the cleansing.
Yeah.
It can be pretty testy there.
Right. First off, Frank, I wasn't suggesting that the Warrens were hokey. I know some people do believe that they're hokey. I believe that they are legit.
I understand. Yeah. Rick, I understand because a lot of people tell me that, you know, just because I know them, you know, they say, well, you're saying because you know. No, I know what they've done, and they explained to me. I've been to so many of their programs.
Yeah.
And like I said, I got to know the people.
I think Lorraine Warren seems like she's a really sweet person.
Yeah, she kind of reminds me of my grandmother.
She does. You just want to grab her and hug her. She's so sweet. She really is. And God bless her that she still gets around and still does these things.
Yeah.
I just can't believe that she still gets around and does it. She's really great.
I have a lot of respect because they were really pioneers in what they did. Now, my belief system doesn't necessarily match theirs as far as the whole demon thing, but that doesn't mean I don't have a lot of respect for their body of work.
I
just have respect for their work. You're right. That's where it lies now. Again, with the Amityville thing that they had, she goes, I knew as soon as they brought, some lawyer, some attorney in who started fooling around with the scripts and things. As soon as they brought him in, she goes, I knew it was going to turn out to be a Hollywood production. They actually backed that. You know, they used their name as part of the credits, but they didn't stay for the entire film, and they just left after a certain point. Mm-hmm. They start to get too much like a Hollywood movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
See, No, I was just going to say, here's a we touch on the whole idea of the cleansing and all that, and I have done that many times, and I'm a big believer in it. But the thing that really fascinates me is that people will automatically go to the idea that, oh my God, it's a demon in their house, and then they bring in a priest, and then they do the whole ritual Romanum, the rites of exorcism. But one thing that they don't tell you on these shows is, and they never specify, they never clarify, they never go into the detail of it, the ritual of exorcism works only on the enemy of God. It will not work on a human spirit. Mm-hmm. Plain and simple. And that is the one thing that really, really kind of makes me crazy is, they go to the demon thing right away. They never give it any consideration that this is just a really, really pissed off human spirit.
A crotchety old guy who died.
Right, exactly. Right. And then they do the exorcism. It's like, it's not going to work on a human spirit. Mm-hmm. Get over it. Stop using it unless it is something that is really inhuman.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. I agree with you. I agree with you. Yeah. It has to be actually, a demon.
Yeah.
If you're going to do that type of thing, if you're doing an exorcist, you better be a demon there. Or else you're not doing anything.
Right.
That guy's going to, the spirit is, he's probably sitting there watching you doing it.
I would be laughing my spectral butt off at somebody. And then I would make things like twice as worse. And I think that that's exactly what happens.
Exactly. Because it usually is. It's like a house blessing or an exorcism. And mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, okay. We have another question from chat. We're going to switch subjects again.
Good. Go ahead.
Mike wants to know, what the hell's a skunk ape?
A skunk ape. Skunk ape is the Florida version of the Bigfoot or Sasquatch.
Okay.
All right.
Why is it called skunk? Because it smells.
Yeah, it stinks. That's exactly. It stinks to high hell heaven. My brother will tell you. He says you can smell that thing 50 yards away. He says it just has such an awful odor. I said, does it smell like a skunk? He says, no, it just has a nasty odor. He says, I don't know what it's smelling. It's just nasty. He says, it's real bad, real bad.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it is. It's a form of a Sasquatch.
Okay. Well, I live up here in the Pacific Northwest, which is Sasquatch country.
Mm-hmm.
And other than injuring myself one time when I was showing my friends a Sasquatch call and having a vocal injury, I have not had any run-ins. And I spend a lot of time in the woods. Mm-hmm. So, what's a guy got to do to see one of these things?
Now, you know where I've been hearing this? Again, like I'm starting to get into this dimensions type of thing.
Yeah.
That these are creatures that could go in and out of dimensions.
I've heard that too.
Which is why pictures are always fuzzy of them.
Fuzzy of them, you're right. They're fuzzy of them, you're right. And they take three steps and they're gone. It's like they jump, and then they're gone. They're not there anymore. I don't know. This is the last I heard. The latest thing I heard was that most people think they're a dimensional creature that comes in and out of our dimension. That's why we don't find any bones. That's why we can't track them. It's just, they're just not part of our dimension.
We don't even catch them on game cams. I mean, you think about it. If you spend any amount of time in the woods, especially during hunting season, which I try not to because I don't want to get shot.
That being said,
with all of those game cams, those motion-activated infrared game cameras that are set up in the woods, how are we not getting more of them on camera?
Yeah, that's a great question. You would think we would.
Yeah. Either that or they're smarter than us.
Yeah, that could be too. But
well, that's not hard to do.
But these things are huge. It's not like they're tiny little things that you can't see. Some of them are 8-9 feet tall. I mean, this is crazy. Where are they? Where do they hide? I don't know. That's what makes me think maybe that dimension theory makes sense.
I can see that.
It makes sense.
I don't know. The only Bigfoot I've ever seen is a carved wooden one on my way up into the mountains, so... I keep hoping. First of all, I don't think cryptozoology is a paranormal topic. I think cryptids are just animals that we have not been able to get close enough to classify, because if you look, the platypus was a cryptid once.
I don't know why they categorized that like that. Yeah, I agree with you, too. It shouldn't be paranormal. I was kind of surprised when somebody said, oh, that's all paranormal stuff. I said, I never think it would be. It's just an unknown creature that just didn't find it or whatever.
Well,
I just think that that's a word that gets thrown around and it's misused more often than not.
But I mean, people see him everywhere. I mean, people just see him everywhere. Now, my brother was just telling me he belongs to this. It's called the UFO Roundtable. It's a group in Yonkers, New York, that they pretty much talk about UFOs generally. But then they talk about other things. And one fellow who came in talked about that something was going into his shed. Getting into his garbage cans, and he couldn't figure out what it was. He said, first of all, it had a doorknob. He said, didn't know how it was opening up, getting into the door, you know, with the doorknob. It couldn't have been a skunk or a raccoon. Nothing was crawling in somewhere, but the windows were all closed. So what my brother said is this fellow one time, he said, I'm going to catch whoever's doing this. He thought maybe it'd be somebody within in the area, in the neighborhood, doing these things. So what he did was crouch down, got in his shed, got it all dark. He had a shotgun with him, and he says he just waited. He says then all of a sudden he heard the doorknob, like, you know, start a rattle. He says, oh, I'm going to catch this guy coming in. He says the thing opened the door. He says, first of all, he says it had to bend down to look in. It's so big. He said, and the shoulders took up the whole frame of the double door of the shed. Just, so maybe, what, 5 feet across?
Yeah.
And I says, well, what happened? Did he shoot him? He says he just stood there. He says he couldn't believe his eyes that something like that was there.
Stuff like that never happens to me, darn it. Okay, the ghost stuff, sure.
I would poop myself the second I saw something like that looking at. That would be my reaction.
I would think it was cool once I was done being terrified.
Yeah.
Wow. I, and I'm saying now this is it's in a really populated area. This is what they call Dutchess County in New York, and it's a very populated area. I mean, we're only talking 40 miles from New York City. So it's not like it's in the way out in the boondocks in the Adirondacks somewhere. So this is kind of really, what is it coming to? That they're coming right to your backyard like that.
Well, it's just like every other habitat. We're encroaching on it.
Deforestation.
If it's a dimensional creature, are they finding ways into...
We're encroaching on their dimension with our out-of-body travel. See, there you go. I just full circle.
You know what? You just hit it on the head.
You solved it, Karen.
No, Karen, no, seriously?
Really?
You just mentioned something that was said at the meeting I was last Tuesday, that we are getting ourselves into a more of a conscious state. We'll be able to see these things more often, and we're going to wind up understanding what these things are. The Bigfoots, the UFOs, whatever.
I'm ready. So, I want to know.
Yep. This is the 2012 thing, December 21st. And, we've hit the lowest part of the cycle, supposedly, and now there's nothing but going up for the next 22,000 years, whatever it is.
Nowhere to go but up?
That's it. For the next 22,000 years. So we're all going to become more consciously aware of things. But we've got to make ourselves open to this. That was their saying. That we have to make ourselves open to this new consciousness.
Well. So wait, because 2012, it's actually December 21st. So we have 8 days of going downhill, and then we start going uphill?
Well, see, now I was told that we actually hit downhill sometime in September. like I said, I sit at these meetings, sometimes my head just spins. Wow. I can walk out of that meeting, my head is spinning like a top. It's fascinating. I mean, the meetings are like from 6:30 to 9. I could stay there all night and listen to these people. They're just incredible. Just so incredible, some of these things.
Well, speaking of staying here all night, I just happened to look at the time. I could stay here all night and listen to you, but
yeah, I could too.
It's like 10 to 8. I hope that you'll come back because I feel like we've barely scratched the surface of stuff we could talk to you about.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I would love to. Yeah.
So when people want to find your book or find you, where can they go to find your book, Paranormal Family and Friends, and where can they go to find more about you?
Well, they just have to get read online on Amazon.com, and they'll find my book or any book, Waters book, whatever. They're all out there in most of this. The funny thing is most of my books are being sold in Europe. I've found out that most of them are being sold in the UK and in Australia, places like that.
Oh, we're huge in the UK and Australia.
Yeah. I guess so. But, that was really hard. But that's where they can find it, you know, online. Just put in either my name, Frank R. Santariga, or Paranormal Family and Friends.
Great.
And, yeah, and on the, you know, in the book, there's my email address, or I can give it to you. It's frsantariga@yahoo.com. If anyone has any questions or whatever, like to speak to me about anything, I'd be more than happy to.
Cheryl, schedule Frank for, you know, after we haven't died in the end of the world.
Awesome.
Oh, man, I was really hoping that we'd just all blink out of existence. Yeah. Oh, damn.
That's right.
So anyway, guys, the book is Paranormal Family and Friends, Frank Santariga. And Frank, thank you so much for coming on. It's been absolutely fascinating couple of hours. And I could have gone on a lot longer. I just happened to glance at my clock and went,
That's fine. And then I'd be more than happy to come back again anytime.
Oh, good. Excellent. We'll look forward to having you come back after the first of the year. Have a very happy holiday in the meantime.
You too. Everybody.
If we don't
here,
blink out of existence.
That. Yeah, that's right. If we don't die.
Okay, guys.
Frank, thank you. Good night.
Bye, Frank.
Great guest, Cheryl. Where'd you find him?
He found us, and I'm so glad he did.
Oh.
I am too. Excellent. He's great, fantastic. Yeah. He was a lot of fun, and I thought it was like 7:15 or something. Yeah. And I looked up, and I was like, "Oh my God, it's 7:50!"
I know, time to go already.
Or other times in the flyover states, of course.
Yeah. No, it was a really interesting, because we did jump around quite a bit.
That's okay.
But there's so much to cover with Frank that it's like, where do you even begin, and is it even possible to end?
It is not possible to end. So, upcoming shows on the last show before the end of the world, next Thursday. We are going to be talking to Cheryl. Do you realize I'm doing this by myself without asking you?
Yay.
I know. It's like I got wings. Okay, anyway, on the last show, you know what it is? I got it all together before the world ended. So last show before the end of the world, we're going to be talking to Chuck Gotsky. He's the founder and lead investigator of In the Dark Investigations. On December 27th, we're going to be talking to David Jones, who's the lead investigator of Project Paranormal. I'm really excited because we have some cool guests coming up after the first of the year, including we're going to have Ben Hansen back, and I'm excited about that because I missed him the first time because I was teaching a kid to drive.
He was cool. I like talking to Ben. He's a good guy.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. And then we are going to be talking to what's the one we scheduled the pre-record, Cheryl?
We're going to be having the Amy and Steve from the Dead Files back on, and they're going to do a follow-up interview, so I'm so excited about that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And actually, that interview won't be for a while. I think we're going to have to wait to air that till maybe March or so.
I don't care. Okay. I just want to keep people listening. And, you know, I'm excited. I like to be excited about things coming up because that way maybe the world won't end.
Yes.
Yes.
It won't.
Now we're all screwed.
We have too much to do.
That's it. Karen has something to look forward to now. You know, here's the thing. Here's my true belief about the end of the world, the apocalypse, all these people who talk about these types of things. And, oh my gosh, the world's been going to end so many times just since, like, 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Since Y2K. But if the world ends, one of two things is going to happen to me. I'm not going to know about it because I'm going to be dead. And if human beings don't have souls, then that means I'm just going to be dead and I'm not going to know. Or I'm going to be dead and my spirit's going to move on anyway. Mm-hmm. So, see, there you go.
Nothing to worry about.
So it's a win-win.
Nothing to worry about. Yep. No, there are far scarier things just here on our planet like Weird Al Yankovic and popsicle sticks.
Oh, you wrapped it all up. Wow. I like how you did that.
Have I not totally full circled this whole show?
You brought it home.
I brought it home. What else is there to say? Stick around. We've got Fox City's Paranormal coming up after us, right?
Yes, and their guest will be medium Deb Lance, so you'll want to stay tuned for that.
She's a medium, huh? Okay, very good. Hey, I have an investigation on Saturday. That's exciting.
Ooh. Nice.
Yeah. You'll have to tell us about it next week.
Sunday, I will have a migraine.
Oh.
I haven't investigated SHIT in months. I'm afraid I'm going to get rusty.
Yes.
You better get out there, Rick.
I would worry about that, too, if I were there.
We don't want you to get rusty.
No, I don't want to be rusty.
No. No. Okay, well, so anyway, let's wrap this baby up and put it to bed, huh?
All right. Hey, and again, Frank, he was wonderful. We're going to have him back on for sure.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Love him. Great guest. A lot of fun. Very interesting. Great stories. Going to try and get all the way through his book. We just got the book last week, and this is a busy time of year.
Very.
I know.
Even if the world's going to come to an end next week, I still got to go Christmas shopping just in case.
I know. Yeah. Well, here's what I would suggest. Anything you're dreading, put off until December 22nd. Now, if we survive, you're going to have to do it on December 22nd. That's the bad news. Mm-hmm. However, if we don't, you didn't have to do it.
Yep. Still got to go out and get my little guy's Christmas presents.
There you go. So that being said, now I'm going to wrap the baby up and put it to bed. You ready?
Yep.
Come back next week. Lay it on us. 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and other times in the flyover states. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Y'all have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on the last show before the end of the world.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.